Joseph.
He's a gorilla of destiny, a Bullet Club OG, continuing on the legacy of the most feared name in all of wrestling. From Tonga to Japan to America, you are now entering Tama's Island with your host, the babyface heel, Tama Tonga.
All right, guys, welcome to another episode here on Tama's Island Podcast. I'm your host, Tama Tonga, my man, my co-host, Ross, motherfucking Berman, the culture vulture. Ross, man, shit, everybody, a lot of shit has been dropping. It's been on fire since last Friday, last week, last weekend. Whatever you dove into wrestling, there was shit happening. We got freaking returns left and right. Everybody in the mayor is coming back. We got fucking people crying and shit. We got young lions coming in out the gate on fire. Shit, man. We got NXT. I don't know what the fuck is going on with them.
I'm not even sure they know what's going on with NXT, if I'm being completely honest.
Damn, man. They got shit so tight, man. Secret's so tight, they're tighter than the Russians, man. I'm telling you. Hey, we got to dive deep. Ross, man, I've been seeing you popping off on Twitter, man, and I want to hear this shit. I want you to bring that energy that you got on Twitter onto the island right now. On Twitch.
Buddy, I've got my Red Bull. I got my smart water. I am ready to rant because, like, this, I can't compare it to the Hindenburg because the Hindenburg was very quick. It went up in smoke very quickly. But whatever, pardon my French, whatever the fuck is happening in WWE right now, it's like watching the Titanic, like, just graze across the iceberg. And you know that water's about to come in, but everyone's still kind of like, oh, we don't need the lifeboats yet. We're fine. We can keep... keep listening to the band. We can keep making some changes. We got a guy a new helmet. Everything's fine. We're going great. It really feels like a dark day in WWE if you're a pro wrestling fan. If you are a sports entertainment fan who has like been waiting for WWE to cast off the shackles of the legacy of pro wrestling, this was the weekend for you because Nick Khan basically came out in an interview and said, look, we're not really looking for the indie wrestlers anymore. We're not looking for the pro wrestlers. We're looking for athletes that we can train right from the start. And so I think a better encapsulation of Vince McMahon saying that they don't see AEW as competition. This is essentially Nick Khan saying, you know what? If you're a pro wrestler or an indie wrestler or someone who likes that part, that side of wrestling, AEW's for you, Ring of Honor's for you, MLW's for you, New Japan's for you. We're going to keep taking your Gable Stevens. We're going to keep taking your Logan Pauls. We're going to keep taking the brands that may want to learn how to wrestle but are already established brands or established athletes really go and be the most WWE that they can be. Because, I mean, let's talk about some of the guys that they brought in as just straight athletes to become wrestlers. Brock Lesnar was one who they just brought in. The Rock did not have a lot of plans for pro wrestling before Patterson started. Yes, he was from the pro wrestling business, but he wanted to be a football player. He was playing in the CFL. Yeah, like he
got Shelton Benjamin.
Benjamin.
They did pick up. There's athletes in there. Yep. There's a lot. There's a lot of athletes in there that transitioned very well and made a very successful career out of WWE. Mm-hmm. But. I mean, there's a big but, right? There's who have they had they brought in from the indies that's like really taking the ship further and higher? I mean, has there been one?
They've brought in people from the indies that have definitely made WWE thing. I mean, let's take the most obvious example. Stunning Steve Austin was brought in. A pro wrestler was brought into WWE, turned into Stone Cold Steve Austin, became a marketing phenomenon. The other examples we can use of this, CM Punk. CM Punk is a good example of someone they brought in from the independent wrestling world. He was able to make such a splash with stuff like the Pipe Bomb that you start seeing stuff like The Ringer and ESPN and Sports Illustrated start to really cover pro wrestling again. And also, one of your buddies, AJ Styles, is another one who's a pro wrestler they brought in. And now, could you imagine WWE without AJ Styles? He's like, he's one of their boys.
He's one of the greats, man. Yeah. He's a Hall of Famer already, man. Legend already in his own right, man. You're right, man. But we've talked about this on the island. And I see she's here on the Twitch chat. Mm-hmm. Kenesha here mentioned Seth Rollins, of course.
Yep.
But she made a good point on Thomas Island a couple weekends ago. Mm-hmm. The direction that WWE is trying to head, they're moving towards a movie star kind of face, you know. And she brought up a point there with Matt, your boy, my boy, that's my main man, mm-hmm. Roman Reigns. With them new teeth, man. I didn't think you needed new teeth, but you went and got them new teeth. And that shit pearly whites, bro. Like, you know, but then now you got people clowning on you. But I'm just saying, he didn't need it. He's a handsome dude, good-looking dude. And they're really hitting that movie star, the Hollywood, right? All right.
And to be fair, Roman Reigns has always kind of had that. He's always done some various movie star Hollywood trickery. I mean, like in his first reign, when they were really trying to make Roman Reigns someone, he was wearing blue contacts for a while, which was just, you know, it's not the most obvious thing you would do to someone, but it's just these little subtle things that you see in Hollywood all the time. But yeah, it definitely feels like. It feels like it's been a big schism in wrestling this weekend because WWE had a huge weekend with SummerSlam. And like I said, that Nick Khan interview really kind of pointed them in a direction away from pro wrestling. And then over on AEW Rampage on Friday night at the United Center in front of a sold out. I don't have the exact number in front of me, but the United Center was sold out. CM Punk made his long awaited return to wrestling after 7 years. Mm-hmm. No bait and switch, we're gonna play the music and then MJF comes out. No, nothing to complicate it. They opened the show, they played his music, he came out, said about 20 minutes of thank yous to the crowd, and then gave everyone free ice cream. It's so simple.
You can't
so
get
easy.
Any more baby face than that, man.
Right?
Free ice cream.
And this is what I said when it happened. This is why CM Punk is a genius, because even if you're someone who just started watching AEW this year and had no idea who the hell CM Punk is, you don't know about the pipe bomb, you don't know about any of the Summer of Punks, you do know about free ice cream. If he's the guy who gave you free ice cream, being CM Punk doesn't matter. Like he really does find that way to hook the people that love him for who he is and bring in some other people who are just sort of like, hey, everyone seems to like you. Why do they like you? Here's some ice cream.
Oh man, and here I was dogging him last week and I was like, man, nah, he fell off, bro. He got exposed. UFC, he done did fell off the train. I'm nope. My man came out. He got the biggest ovation. Holy shit, the welcoming he got. It was all over social media. It just, all weekend, I felt like people were just talking about him. And then he topped it off with ice cream.
Yep.
You genius son of a bitch, you. I like that.
It was really brilliant. And if we're going to really talk about how smart he was with that promo, it wasn't just the ice cream. He also did stuff like the first words out of his mouth in a pro wrestling ring for 7 years were, you know how to make a guy feel like Britt Baker in Pittsburgh. So the first thing that CM Punk does when he comes back from hiatus is say, hey, you know who's hot shit right now? Britt Baker. That is how you get, that is how you take some of that popularity that Punk has. Some of that, let's use that old term, take some of that heat and give it to one of your current stars. And he wasn't done, because after he said his thank yous, after he did the promo, he went, hey, Darby Allin, I'm just going to call you out. None of this, hey, you have to attack me. None of this, oh, you spilled my drink and so now I'm mad at you, or there's no super. It's just literally, I want to fight you. I've seen you fight and now I would like a turn at that. And it feels big. It feels special. And the most important part, it's not complicated. It's easy. It's not hard.
Straightforward, man. There was no, like, nobody came in to hijack at the end. No, like, bullshit. Nah, it was 20 minutes, he soaked it all up and he spread that love all around the you know. And speaking of Darby Allin, damn, can you, I mean, shit, can you get any more love than Darby Allin right now? We got Sting by his corner. He's on. They got the Rockets behind him, huh?
The man is having a very good year. He's got Sting behind him. He seems to be a regular tag team partner of Jon Moxley and Eddie Kingston, who are both extremely popular. And now he's got CM Punk putting his name in his mouth. And so it very much seems like Darby Allin has big things ahead of him. I'm curious to see what happens on September 5th at All Out when Punk and Allin fight. It's entirely possible. It's entirely possible Darby beats Punk. This is the thing about CM Punk. He's not going to necessarily get, yes, he'll give you free ice cream, but he's not going to give you everything you expect. We don't know if he's going to go on a victory run or if he's never going to win another match for the rest of his life. Like, he's 0-0 right now, and he cut a good promo, but that's just a promo. And so we still haven't seen him in the ring. We still haven't even seen him fight, because after he said the promo, he literally just got out of the ring and let the rest of the show play. They had three more matches. They had a whole lot of other stuff they had to do that wasn't CM Punk related, and at no point did CM Punk come in there and put his foot on the neck of whatever their plans are for the rest of the roster. It was really, just really reserved, really well done. And the Friday Night B Show for AEW did over 1 million viewers, 1.12, something like that. It was the highest number they've done since their premiere. They got 0.5 in the demo, which I'm told means is good. A lot of the ratings, I still don't know what I'm looking at, but I'm told it's very good. And so when you have all of this hype around what was essentially, you know, one promo with three very simple matches after it, that is a complete shift in the way we're supposed to think about wrestling. Because ever since the Monday Night Wars, it's always been like, oh, you got to give your big-ass matches, like Goldberg and Hogan has to happen on Nitro, WWE title matches, all this kind of stuff. We've been built up to believe that TV has to be a pay-per-view every week. And here they are just giving us a moment, being rewarded in the ratings, and I got to believe they're gonna take those lessons.
Touche, AEW. What a way to play that Friday night, man. Damn, I wasn't expecting you guys to make this kind of run, especially with the second show on a Friday night with an hour. Hours isn't perfect, too. That was real perfect for them. Props, AEW. I'll give you props. I'm going to take that back later, though. Let's go.
And hey, we'll get into that because Nick Khan's comments does have some implications. But it wasn't just AEW this week, because this is the big deal about this AEW B show, is it was the Friday night show that's supposed to be like their secondary program, and it still has about as much buzz come this Tuesday that we're recording this as SummerSlam, NXT TakeOver, and Raw all in a row from Las Vegas. And it wasn't like WWE, you know, pulled back on the reins, no pun intended, and did some reserved shows. WWE had the biggest SummerSlam they've had since at least the Wembley Stadium, and even then it sounds like they beat that one. It was the most, man.
When WWE tweeting that shit, I don't know. I don't believe that shit. I'm like, come on, man. What's that thing when you win when whoever wins the war is the ruler, is the one that writes the history?
The winners get to write the history, and WWE did invent how you're supposed to report wrestling attendance, because when WWE reports their attendance, there's the real number, and then there's the WWE number that includes like everyone that they brought into that. But like build it, like every employee of the WWE, every employee of the building,
all the cooks,
the important thing is the inflated WWE number for Allegiant was bigger than the inflated WWE number for Wembley. So, you know, it's not like they are still competing against their own Fugazi here. But no, it was a big SummerSlam, and they brought back some heavy duty names to compete with what AEW is doing right now. They brought back Becky Lynch, one of the most popular babyface performers in WWE, bar none, outside of maybe The Fiend when he was there, but I don't even know if The Fiend was babyface. And then they brought back Brock freaking Lesnar to kind of juice up Friday Night SmackDown. And it still doesn't seem to have the impact that Punk did. And I got to believe part of that is the way that they used these people, the way that they brought these people back. Because Becky didn't just return. Becky Lynch showed up to SummerSlam as a replacement for Sasha Banks, who, where she is, we're still trying to figure out what's going on there. I've heard every...
NXT, It just appeared with NXT right now.
Yeah, no, I've heard every rumor about Sasha Banks that you could think of, but either way, she wasn't there. Carmella was almost the replacement. Becky Lynch beat up Carmella, pinned hot superstar. I mean, full-blown WrestleMania main eventer, was featured at the Rolling Loud Festival, has been one of the pillars of the women's division since at least April. Bianca Belair gets beat in under 30 seconds by a move that Becky Lynch was not doing as a finisher before she left the W. This was a debut for a finisher. It seemed to leave a really sour taste in everyone's mouth. Now there's reports that not only is Becky Lynch back and has beaten Bianca Belair, but she's gonna be the heel in this feud. And so apparently they've brought back the hottest babyface just to make sure everyone boos her. Bianca Belair did not look great in the match. I mean, she was like, when she saw it was Becky Lynch, she got excited as if to suggest that Becky Lynch is easier than Carmella. She really came off like
Thomas Island listeners. As guys, so much of our identity is wrapped up in our hair, from how it feels after getting a fresh cut to the way it's perfectly styled before we go out. And then we get into our 20s and our 30s and we start to notice those first signs of hair loss. Oh, it definitely starts to feel like panic time. Because let's face it, no guy ever really wants to go bald, but thankfully, there's now an easy way to keep your hair with Keeps. Did you know that 2 out of 3 guys will experience some form of male pattern baldness by the time they're 35? The only way to really prevent hair loss is to do something about it while you still have hair left. And Keeps makes it very easy. You don't have to go to your doctor's office for hair loss prescriptions. Now, all you have to do is visit a doctor online, get your hair loss medication delivered right to your home, and start now. That's right, they make it easy, and they deliver your medication every 3 months, so you can say goodbye to hanging out in the pharmacy checkout lines and all those awkward doctor visits. And also, they have the only 2 FDA-approved hair loss products out there. You may have tried them before, but you've never tried them for this price. Again, you have to start while you still have hair left to save, and treatments can typically take between 4 to 6 months, so it's important to act fast. And if you want that first month free, go to keeps.com/Tama. That's right, keeps.com/Tama for your first month free. Head on over to keeps.com and keep the hair you have while you still have it.
I hate to put it, she came off like an idiot. Like, she came off like someone was like, yeah, I'm gonna shake your hand. I'm so excited to face you, Becky Lynch. This is gonna be great. Becky Lynch smacked the taste out of her mouth and pinned her in under 30 seconds. I mean, what? How do you do that to a WrestleMania main eventer?
Ooh, like, that's cold-blooded, man. That's cold as ice. How you going? Oh, especially the way they've been pushing Bianca Belair, man. Gosh. I mean, I'm with you, Ross. How you gonna come in? How you gonna bring in Becky Lynch? Huge, huge baby face, turn her heel. If they wanted to make noise, I don't know if that was it, man, because I didn't hear that much noise after. I still heard about CM Punk.
And not only did they kill the buzz, they killed the crowd. I mean, if you watch the 4-hour or something SummerSlam that was this past Saturday, about an hour and a half in is when the Becky Lynch Bianca Belair match happens. The crowd goes, I mean, silent for it. There are some boos, but it's really just more of that. We don't even want to engage with this kind of silence. And it just sticks like that for the next 2.5 hours. Through every match that they have. Edge and Seth Rollins do a pretty good job of trying to get the crowd back. Roman Reigns and John Cena do a decent job of trying to get the crowd back, but everyone's just restless and mad and angry, and it was a bizarre SummerSlam. And even before you had Becky Lynch ruining the party for everyone, you had stuff like Eva Marie slapping around a stuffed doll and then losing the match and having her and then crying over the fact that her former manager stole her robe. Like, there was, it was just so juvenile, and not in the way that, like, WWE, because usually WWE is like one of those cartoons where you're like, I know this is for kids, but I'm having a good time. And this was like, I don't even want my kids watching this. This is just dumb and boring. They killed the SummerSlam crowd with the Becky Lynch stuff. And then you add in that where we're heading after this, because now we've brought back Brock Lesnar. So Brock Lesnar is going to face Roman Reigns for the umpteenth time. I mean, if you go back to 2018 at the number of matches that Roman Reigns and Brock Lesnar had, there is not even the good ones. Even the ones, I liked. WrestleMania 34 is a fun ass match if you watch it in a vacuum. Even the good ones, the crowd hated. Even the good ones, the crowd were like, "You can't wrestle. This is terrible. Please stop giving this to us." Like it, there is nothing that should suggest that Brock Lesnar versus Roman Reigns will be anywhere near as good as it was back then. It will only be a rehash, except now Lesnar's got a ponytail. And so it just feels like they're making all of these big moves for nothing. I mean, this is a company where they have Bobby Lashley choking out Gil Goldberg's sophomore in high school son, and the crowd's going, "Yeah, kill the kid, kill the kid."
I like that one.
I loved it too, but I can promise you that was not the reaction they were going for. especially when you then have the crowd like cheering Lashley and Bill Goldberg just there being like, "I'm gonna kill you, you hurt my kid," and everyone liked it. "Hey, you okay?" "Yeah, I'm fine. Don't worry, Dad, I'm okay." And, like, it was really the whole show was just abysmal. And this is SummerSlam. This was supposed to be the big welcome back. They should not be up against the ropes after the B show of their competition, the Friday night B show of their competition that was main evented by a guy that doesn't even have a contract. And now over in WWE, they can't compete with the buzz. They can't grasp it. And now you've got this. Yeah. And now you've got this Tony Khan interview essentially saying, "You know what? We're done with pro wrestling. We don't want the indie wrestlers. They can go, you know, work for other places. We want to become whatever this is that they presented this weekend, but bigger."
Hollywood, Hollywood of wrestling, where, you know, they're not doing wrestling. It's just entertainment. They're going to go into acting and we're going to go from there. I saw they had Logan Paul on the other day. Mm-hmm. And he's grabbing quite more heat than
the two biggest heels in WWE right now are Logan Paul and Kyle O'Reilly. Because Kyle O'Reilly, the minute he beat Adam Cole at this, I know we're kind of jumping all over the place. We will coalesce this in a minute, but there's a lot to talk about. When Kyle O'Reilly beat Adam Cole at NXT TakeOver 36, and we should mention, the way TV has presented Kyle O'Reilly, he is the plucky underdog fighting against his narcissistic, egomaniacal friend to finally be able to stand on his own. And the minute he wins, people start booing and yelling bullshit at him like he's Logan Paul. Like, this is gonna be a weird time for WWE if they're gonna be going down this route. I don't know.
Speaking of your boy Adam Cole, man, you made some predictions last time. You were kind of like, you know, you were scat, like touching on it, but you weren't going deep. But I saw on Twitter you were dead on, man. Not yet. We're gonna find out. We're gonna find out. But it seems like NXT here is about to lose a talent. Mm-hmm. Now, you know more about it than I. I've only been reading stuff, you know, all over the place.
And it seems like whether he re-signs with WWE or not, NXT is absolutely losing Adam Cole. This past weekend's TakeOver 36 was supposed to be the final Adam Cole match in NXT. He has an extension with WWE that he signed like about a month ago or so. Mm-hmm. That extension runs out on Friday. This was just broken by, I believe it was Fightful.com through their Fightful Select. That he basically on Friday is when he becomes a free agent. For a lot of people had been thinking he was going to re-sign with WWE, but now post TakeOver, it has been a complete pendulum has swung the other way, and now everyone is saying it's going to be he's going to be AEW bound. But it does seem like Adam Cole is going to very close to being the hottest free agent in pro wrestling at the moment. He's got a lot of buzz behind him, and he did not have the best showing at NXT TakeOver. They really let him kind of have it if you're looking from, because like. Let's talk about NXT for
you gonna,
one second.
You gonna do the job on your way out type situation?
Well, no, he did do the job on his way out, and that's mm-hmm. completely understandable. Yeah. But he did the job in a 2 out of 3 falls match, which in NXT, mm-hmm. NXT 2 out of 3 falls matches usually go like an hour. Like, these are the Adam Cole and Kyle O'Reilly have done it. Adam Cole and Johnny Gargano have done it. Gargano, Ciampa. When they do these two out of three falls matches, the expectation is it's going to be a long ass match. Mm-hmm. And so I had just been kind of jokingly saying that, look, if this match goes less than 45 minutes, he's done. He's gone from NXT. Lo and behold, the first fall is about 3 minutes in. They have a decent but not exactly like really heated street fight for like 15 minutes. And the match is over within 25 minutes. Two out of three falls, a regular fall, a street fight, and a cage match, 25 minutes. Which for the workhorse brand where they're like, oh yeah, everyone gets these long-ass storytelling matches, that feels like a message, especially since it didn't close the show. They closed the show with the title. And so it really... And NXT kind of has that lucha thing where, like, if they got a grudge match, that will take precedence over the title a lot of times. Guys like Andrade, Bobby Roode, all of them had their NXT title runs in the co-main event, so to speak, because of grudge matches. But this grudge match apparently does not warrant the hour-long NXT treatment, does not warrant the main event treatment. And so I'm just looking at all of this subtext saying he pissed in someone's cornflakes.
I've been seeing some of the stuff from the Bucks or on their shit on the social media. I saw a ghost one time. They put up a little emoji with a ghost, and I was like, all right, that's something. That could be something. That could be Adam Cole coming back from the grave, somewhat, right? Yep, you mentioned that he was wearing was it green and gold?
Green and gold, and AEW is in Milwaukee this Wednesday, but I tweeted that before I found out about the contract running out on Friday. And so that it doesn't look like he's going to be there Wednesday, but next Wednesday, who knows? because it very much feels like he's done. Even his wife has kind of been doing some joking around on Twitter, ending a lot of her tweets with Bay Bay and stuff like that. And so we'll see. It definitely feels like AEW sounds pretty confident. And the last time AEW was pretty confident was that New Japan thing where Tony Khan was like, hey, I am the Forbidden Door, Nick Khan. So their confidence is usually well found. This isn't a company that you know is going to start throwing out Easter eggs if they aren't going to show you the bunny.
Look, we talk about this all the time. There is a lot of talent in AEW. There's a lot. They're packed, yo. And not everybody. There's only a few spots there on TV and whatnot, and they got two shows, right? One 2 or 3 hours, and the other 1 hour, right?
Yep.
Adam Cole is a big talent. It's a big name. Yep. And that's a talent that you need to run with. Man, you could be putting a lot of people on the bench just to... Damn, dude.
No, you're not wrong. Because there's also talk that maybe Wyndham Rotunda, the former Bray Wyatt, is headed there. There's a Tony Nese is someone who has a lot of friends in WWE. There are a lot of talents that have been... Buddy Murphy, another one, that have been talked about possibly heading to AEW. And you can't have CM Punk fight all of these guys. You know what I mean? I like that CM Punk showed up and was like, I'm calling out Darby Allin. But eventually, if you start signing Adam Cole and you start signing Buddy Murphy, eventually you're going to start seeing some of these guys that are on Rampage move down to Dark Elevation, and some of the guys on Dark Elevation move down to Dark, and all that, things rolling downhill. I don't know. Especially now that Nick Khan has basically dared AEW to take anyone that's a pro wrestler, because he's essentially said, like, hey, if you're an indie talent, we're not going to be scooping you up and putting you in the warehouse like we have been for the past 4 years. And so, like, your Jake Atlases and your who are some other guys that they brought in, like your JD Drakes, they're not going to be necessarily taken away with the swiftness that they were the past few years. And so... it does feel like that Vince McMahon comment where he was like, let's see if we can throw them some more talent, was him being like, it was a threat. It was him, threatening to flood the free agent market, free agency, so that way Tony Khan has to make some really hard choices.
That's crazy. I mean, they did. It looks like they're changing their tactics, because we talked about this on the island that what they were trying to do before was take up all the talent from the indies, right? They were trying to hog it all up. Nobody gets all the good talent. And now they're going to flush it all back out. And really, there's one company that's able to really take them in. I mean, really, is AEW. They're the hottest one right now. And I don't know, man. That sounds like a plan. That sounds like an evil plan to me.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Especially since, like, AEW is, how do I put this? AEW and Impact are the only two right now where I really trust them to be able to give some kind of a showcase to these guys. Because there are, not all of the companies that are working through the Forbidden Door right now are created equal. There are some companies where it's just, I don't know, NWA has been trying so hard to get that buzz going, and it just does, it, like, they have a big pay-per-view this weekend. We'll see if anything happens from it.
I hope they're advertising. Shit. A little bit.
Not much. And not as much as you would think, especially with the Empower show that they have coming up that's supposed to be the big women's only celebration of the female talent that is outside of WWE. Mm-hmm. But, like, I don't know where the follow through with that is unless they decide to actually, like, if the NWA decides to rebrand as a women's promotion, I think they could do some great things. But right now it's Tyrus and Friends. And so it is, like, they keep finding ways to, I half expect Tyrus at Empower. They keep finding ways to put him in there. But it does feel like WWE is going to flood this free agency, because that will also create this expectancy in fans, right? Because now fans are like, oh my God, I get to see all my favorites in AEW. And there isn't room for all of your favorites in AEW. There isn't room. No, no, Tony. Tony's the one that can't fall for it.
I can't tell. Khan? I'm just gonna say Khan, man. Don't fall for it, Khan. Shit, don't fall for it. Save yourself. Close the door.
We have all been turned into Captain James T. Kirk in Star Trek 2. Just yell, whether you're in WWE or whether you're in AEW, you're just yelling Khan at the heavens. But no, it is, and here's the other brilliant part of this. Because, like, right now, there's this really harmonious relationship between AEW, New Japan, MLW, all the independents, everyone's working together against WWE, because it's us versus WWE, right?
Yeah.
What happens?
I don't know about that. Hold on. I know where you're heading with this. Say it. Yep.
I'm just gonna say this. Right now, everyone has kind of formed this alliance against WWE. And if WWE stops playing along and it's no longer us versus them, it's gonna have to become us versus each other. Like, because there is only so much harmony that these companies can create as long as they don't have a common enemy. And so with WWE being the common enemy, you can be like, yeah, you can start to give away some stuff, because at the end of the day, it's about all of us taking down Goliath. Whereas once it becomes WWE isn't competing with us, then it's just going to be whoever the first guy to decide, hey, this is my market, that's going to be the start. That's going to be the flame. I don't know. What do you think of
I'm with that? You, Ross.
Yeah.
I am 100% with you. I agree. When WWE is out of the picture, what's going to happen then? What's going to happen? You think we can create the what they used to have before, the alliance?
I don't know, because it's going to depend a lot on what these companies' plans are, because we're already seeing now that there was all this talk that Hiroshi Tanahashi was going to face Jon Moxley at some point. Now that has apparently been pushed to the back burner, if it was ever going to be a thing in the first place. And so you're already starting to see, especially with New Japan and AEW, they're starting to consider the fact that, like, New Japan has a North American promotion now. They're selling tickets to them. It's not just they're in a studio where, you know, it's kind of this safe haven. Now they're actually a promotion. And so they're going to have to strategize like a promotion and not like this sort of not necessarily like an ally, but not like, you know, they were. And so I wouldn't be surprised if that does change the way the two companies work. I'm not saying it's going to be an all-out war and, oh my God, the companies are going to go, but it's definitely going to pull back on that anything can happen.
Have territories.
Yep.
There is no way we can have territories, because there is TV and there's internet.
Yep.
Everybody's got access to everything. There's no way. Egos is huge in this game right now.
Mm-hmm.
And I just don't see that. I don't see it. I don't see it happening. I don't see territories. I don't see us working out together. Right now, we're only working together because we're trying to take the big man down. And when the big man is like, you know what? Keep all your indies. Have all of them. Flushing them out. Mm-hmm. Have all of it. We're just gonna grab all the Hollywood. We'll grab athletes. Yep. We'll just do our own thing. Which they can, because they got the resources and they got the connection. And they're just way ahead. They're a stock company. None of us are right now.
Exactly. And this is kind of the like, I feel like WWE is going to have a real hard time with this new direction, because I think investors are going to love it. Hollywood's going to love it. Networks are going to love it. Wrestling fans aren't. And that's going to be the kind of push-pull, because yes, WWE has been doing decent numbers, but they're still doing just about a million more than AEW. And so that means that there's about a million pro wrestling fans and about 2 million people that are willing to be pro wrestling fans or sports entertainment fans when WWE is on in North America right now. And so I wouldn't be surprised if they start with this big head on their shoulders, like, here's what we're going to do. We're going to give all of them the wrestlers, so that way we get all of the high-profile athletes, and I'm saying this as what it looks like, and it appears like everyone in wrestling gets everyone else. You get the rest people that want to be wrestlers. You get, you know, the people that maybe can afford to train, and we'll train your Olympic gold medalists and all that. But what's going to happen, and what usually happens in a situation like this, is the wrestlers put on a more entertaining show because they understand the parameters of pro wrestling. Like, yes, WWE is going to be able to have huge names, but like when you look at someone like a Braun Strowman, like a Mandy Rose, these are people who look like the platonic ideal of a WWE superstar, and they still didn't get them to that point. And I think people in the pro wrestling business are better at making that kind of star than WWE is.
I'm gonna go a little bit deep and tell me what you think of this.
Okay.
WWE is good at catering to the kids, and that's the root. And when you start there, and these kids, whatever shit WWE gives them, they're gonna eat it up at a young age, and they grow up with that thinking that's what wrestling is. And so a generation would change. That's just me thinking that. I'm just thinking like that. What do you think, Ross?
No, I think you're spot on, and I think it is. It's a smart thing for WWE, because it's the kind of thing that's going to keep them around forever. But I do think that if AEW continues on the track they're on right now, if New Japan continues on the track they're on right now, and a lot of other companies continue to maintain this ecosystem that we've got, this pro wrestling ecosystem, I think what it can create, there can someday be this harmonious point where WWE is creating young fans who eventually grow up to become pro wrestling fans. They start as sports entertainment, move to pro wrestling, and ideally it might get to vice versa. Tony Khan has been able to get some stuff with kids. Like, I mean, Darby Allin, yes, he is. It's slightly the older kids, but it's high schoolers, but they're still kids. They're still people that need their parents to pay for stuff from time to time. And that's what you need. That's the real hook, are the people that control the wallets in the family. And so I don't know if it's going to be as disastrous as I've already said, but it doesn't feel like it's going to be the kind of thing that WWE can hold firm to, because they're going to need wrestlers to train these celebrities. Right. They're going to need people that actually know what the hell they're doing to make sure that these people aren't going to hurt anyone. And right. So like I wouldn't be surprised if they try for 2 years of signing, you know, your Gable Stevens, your Logan Pauls and all that. And then they're like, we need a Daniel Garcia. We need a hand that can actually, you know, help these guys out. Because I mean, that's hell. Guys like AJ Styles were people who you never thought they would bring in, but then they bring them in because they need someone who can take Roman Reigns to a 20-minute match back then. You know,
I'll give it to WWE. They're constantly changing their approach. And when I started, it felt like the only people they wanted was these, what we're addressing right now, is these athletes. When I started 10 years ago, I didn't think I was going to be able to get into WWE because they only wanted big athletic guys, and that's who they hired. Are any of them around from that time? A little, maybe zero, maybe one, yeah. Two, four, zero.
But, yeah, I'm thinking from 10 years ago, I think a lot of those guys are AEW.
They're all gone. You know, but you know, they're always adjusting. So like you say, maybe 2 years from now, they're going to change again. They're going to like, all right, grab all the indie guys. Let's grab everybody that we just let go. Because really, that's when you get let go from WWE, don't say never, because they still pick up guys that were let go, you know, a couple years ago. Look at Lashley. Lashley was gone, you know, he came back.
Well, hell, let's talk about Samoa Joe, a guy who got released earlier this year. NXT brought him in, and now he's the NXT champion. They closed TakeOver 36 with Joe winning the NXT title for the record-breaking third time. And so he has been kind of brought in as this reminder of NXT's glory days. But yeah, never say never, because look where he is. If you had told me 1 year ago that Karrion Kross would be where he is and Samoa Joe would be where he is right now, I wouldn't have believed you. Because Karrion Kross was the kind of guy who, when he was on the independent scene, and I didn't quite get it, people were like, oh, just wait until, like, a WWE gets him, and they can, like, really wrap themselves around his character, and that you know, oh, just imagine him with a WWE entrance. That's what people kept telling me about Karrion Kross. And then the minute Karrion Kross gets to WWE, apparently they went, everything about him we don't like. We need to take his wife away from him. We need to put a mask on him now so that he looks like Lord Humongous from the from Mad Max mixed with Kenny McCormick from South Park. I can't believe he can actually talk in that thing. But like it feels so weird that like Samoa Joe is a guy that WWE has never changed. Like, he's still doing the Muscle Buster. He's still the Samoa Joe that you saw in Ring of Honor, and he's their champion. Whereas like with Karrion Kross, they can't stop tweaking this guy.
Maybe they tweaked him over too much. I don't know, but he just never gave me the energy. He just never gave me the vibe. Even when he was in NXT, he just doesn't give me. There's not. He doesn't have this like confidence in my eyes to me. Yep. He doesn't give me that vibe. Like he can F shit up, man. He can really F shit up. And I just, even now, I'm sorry. I saw that little mask thing. You know, everybody's making a big deal out of that mask. And it kind of gave me some Star Trek vibes, you know, a little bit here and there. And there's no vibe that I'm getting from him, because he never gave me the vibe from before. So this, I got to see something else, man. He's just not, he doesn't have it for me. Well, I've seen him on the indies. I thought he kind of had more energy in the indies. I got that vibe from him in the indies. I didn't see that since he went to WWE, even in NXT.
No. I keep also hearing the argument, well, he needs his wife with him. He needs Scarlett Bordeaux in that entrance being his manager. And if I'm WWE and I have hired Karrion Kross and I have hired Scarlett Bordeaux and I am paying them, I'm not necessarily sure that I want to make Scarlett just the source of all of Karrion Kross's confidence. She's a very she's a very beautiful woman, so you've got that going for it. She's also a really talented wrestler. I've seen her beat up Colby Covington at an independent show. Like, she actually can put some stuff together between the ropes. And so I would be surprised if WWE went, there is no way we are adding this albatross of Karrion Kross to Scarlett Bordeaux when we might be able to make her into her own kind of superstar. You know, if they're paying for two superstars, they want two superstars, not one that is making the other one look great, like an Aaron Sorkin character.
Here's what I saw, Ross.
Yeah.
They took her away to see if he can float. They need somebody who can stand on his own, mm-hmm. and really, if they want somebody to pull the company, mm-hmm. and they're going to see who can do that. And my man, if you're going to be pushed as like this killer, you got to bring it, man. You can't have a girl be like the attraction for you. Mm-hmm. You're missing something if you need a girl, you know? So the whole girl thing is like, she's a side piece, but you need to be like the deal. The real deal. He ain't flowing very well for me unless something changes, man. Maybe no, add an extra like horn to the mask or something.
Yeah, that's what he needs. He needs more. just put more stuff on him.
I need more cowbells on him. All right, can we get some more cowbells? He needs some more buttons and shit on him. But, I don't know, man.
But by the time we're done with him, he's going to be like Carl Havoc in that I Think You Should Leave sketch. Just walk around like, I can't breathe in all of this stuff. The chin kills. I don't want to be around anymore. It just feels like they're overcomplicating stuff, which when the weekend started with such a simple moment, it kind of makes all of WWE's like twists and turns that much more glaring. Like they had Becky Lynch, who is a new mom, who has never been beaten as a champion. She relinquished the belt, making a triumphant return, and they decided, We should boo the hell out of this person. How can we do everything to make sure the returning champion that hasn't been beaten, who just had a baby, how can we make everyone hate her? What mentality is that? In what world are you trying to make life that hard for yourself? Because, like, yes, it's going to be hard for Becky, but it's also going to be hard for the promotion itself. As a promoter, I want an easy job. I want to be able to be like, look, here's my talent. My talent is making the money for me. And in this case, they're just trying to figure out ways to shoot themselves in the foot.
They're
taking dead aim. They're fixing their sight on their own toe. It's not an accident anymore. This is trying to get an insurance claim or something. This is like what Elvis used. You know, there used to be stories in the bad days of Elvis Presley that he would like be putting drills into his foot and stuff like that so he could get pain medication. That's what it feels like WWE's doing right now. They're like, if we keep hurting ourselves, the people on Twitter will be like, hey, no, let it play out and they'll defend it for us. Meanwhile, we can exercise whatever the pain of flagellation is going to exercise for us. And I don't know. It doesn't have to be this hard. It was even bookended with ideas of this, because we started with this big, simple moment that you didn't have to overcomplicate. And then I've also ended the weekend with proof that if you take two rookies, you put them in the New Japan Dojo for 4 months, they can come out and have a very damn entertaining 10-minute match that's pretty much just them grappling. And so, like, there are clearly developmental places that work. There are clearly places where simplicity works. And WWE has put their earmuffs on and went, nah, we're good. We don't simplicity, no. Easy developmental that gives us wrestlers that know what they're doing. Nah, screw that.
WWE universe. We're gonna create a multiverse. We're gonna just do our own shit over here, man.
It's true. The more fantasy booking that happens because of WWE's terrible bookings, the more possibilities are created. And so really, they're in the dream business. They're making you do all the dreaming for you, but they're in the dream business. But let's talk about this, because New Japan debuted two new rookies, two new young lions who wrestled a hell of a match. I'm gonna butcher these names because they're very new, but Kosei Fujita and Ryohei Oiwa. Mm-hmm. Yeah, they had their first debut match. They went to a 10-minute draw, and it was great. Fujita's like he's real down and dirty grappler. He said that he wants to model himself off of guys like Suzuki and other guys like that. And then Oiwa has this, like, I don't know, he has this charisma to him. Like, the crowd seemed to really, really be in, like, whenever he was on the receiving end, like, you could feel the crowd, like, I don't know, endeared to him. And you even, before we went on the air, you said that you'd met these guys a few months ago when you were at the dojo. Tell me about Oiwa and Fujita. They just were brought in this year, apparently.
There were like six or seven of them that when I was in Japan about 3-4 months ago, they all came in on their first day. And they had to clean up the whole dojo, all upstairs. They had to make room. They had to, you know, move Liger's room. Now, if you're wondering why Liger's at the dojo, Liger is like the man. So he not only has his own place at home, but they gave him a room because he's like, that's like big senpai, big senpai, Dai senpai is what they call it. All right. Okay. So they had to move him to make room for these extra guys. And look, there's been guys that's been at the dojo now for probably a year and a half, 2 years, and they haven't debuted. And these two here have already been debuted after, 3-4 months?
Yeah, 4 months.
That's saying a lot. That means that we're seeing something and we need to push forward. Mm-hmm. Now, these guys have a lot, you know, most guys that come into the dojo, they got background. They come in from shoot wrestling, man. When I say shoot, that's real. That's real wrestling. They come in from freestyle, Greco, wherever it is, but they've done it in college. They've done training, whatever kind of training they've done. These guys are legit, man. Yep. And you can tell, you know, they came in jacked already. They weren't trying to get jacked. They come in fit and ready to take off each other's heads. And that's what you want to see here in New Japan. They're looking for legit guys, not just looking for athletes or whatever. These are these guys who can handle themselves, that wherever we send them, whether we send them over to England or America or Mexico, like, they can legit handle themselves. You know, that's cool and all with all the tumbling and all that, but these guys can F you up if they need to. So good to see them out 3-4 months already in the dojo, that already debuting. That's kind of like, That's been a while since I've seen somebody do that. Because usually you do 1 year. You're supposed to go up to about a year before you debut. And to do that in 3-4 months, I don't think I've ever seen anybody do that since I've been in New Japan.
I mean, and you can kind of see why if you watch this match, you can kind of see why. I mean, like I said, they really, that 10 minutes is a fast and furious bit of wrestling. Like a lot of back and forth grappling, the kind of stuff that, like, if you're a fan of, like, the real old school, like, 80s, 70s New Japan, like, they already have that down pat. And so I'm real excited to see where these guys are in a year. But it also speaks to the developmental side of New Japan because, like, it's like I said, WWE has kind of said that they're going to leave pro wrestling with the people that want to be pro wrestlers. And in a lot of cases, especially in North America, what you'll get is you'll find a lot of people who got a dream and they are going to live that dream, whether the skill set matches with the dream or not, you know, and a lot of trainers will be like, you know, they don't necessarily have the technical wherewithal, but they got spunk. And it seems like with New Japan, they really go like, I don't care how much you want this, you got to be able to get in there, and you got to be able, if whether it's 4 months like these guys were able to do, or a year and a half like some of the other still to debut dojo talent have done, they want to make sure that when you go in there, you're not going to embarrass them, which again seems like such a simple ethos. It seems like such a it doesn't even seem like the kind of thing you need to read a book to be, you know, you don't need a business degree to be like, hey, what if all of our wrestlers, you know, were good? What if all of our wrestlers met a certain serviceable standard? That's just common sense. And I think that's what kind of wrestling fans have been brought back to this week, is the idea of common sense wrestling. The idea that this can be simple, that what you want is good. Because, like, that's the big kind of, I think, response to the CM Punk return. We have been told by WWE for so long, look, if you like something, that's your problem. And if you are expecting joy, that's your problem. We are here to raise your hopes as high as possible and then crush them back down so we can raise them back up again, yada, yada. And there is a philosophy to that. But what that has also done is it's led to a company where their entire ethos now is, hey, destroy every bit of joy that these people have. Make sure that they want our idea of what is a fun time. So that way we don't have to deal with all of that problem of other people's expectations. And now you got Tony Khan basically saying, look, you guys wanted CM Punk. That sounds like a good idea. So we gave you CM Punk, and the ratings have shown that was a good idea. The ticket sales have shown that was a good idea. We're now at the point where All Out, you can't get a ticket for under like $300. Like, it is one of the highest cost secondary markets in wrestling history. Ooh. And so there is clearly something to be said for giving the fans what they want, giving, you know, rewarding hope, rewarding dreams. And so I hope WWE wakes up to this. I respect the hell out, and I think Nick Khan will, because there is one bit in that interview that I keep bringing up where Nick Khan says he wishes that Raw was 4 hours because they would get more money for it. He wishes SmackDown was 8 hours, but he also understands that that's not realistic. And so if he's the kind of guy who says, like, hey, you know what, these shows need to be as profitable as possible, at some point, it's entirely possible the profitable as possible will mean, hey, maybe don't mind fuck your fans for a little bit. Maybe the trauma response needs to be washed off a little bit so they can actually, you know, expect to like some stuff. It just feels like this weekend really highlighted the abusive relationship WWE has with their fans. And I think you see a lot of people are ready to call them on it now.
Yeah, you know what? We sit here, and I talk a lot of shit on them, but fuck, they've been killing it for how long? Mm-hmm. How long have been in doing this? And so I may not understand, especially right now with all the moves they're making, we can't understand a damn thing they're doing. I'm waiting to see what it all means.
Yep.
You know, because I can't. I love talking about it. I love going in because I'm like, I don't understand what the fuck they're doing. NXT, what the hell happened? We, you know, and the only person right now that seems like they're doing it right besides New Japan is AEW. AEW is you're right, man. They're giving is simplicity, is giving the fans what they want, and it's great. It's a great product right now. They're on fire. you see WWE fire some guys that you would, your mouth just drops. You're like, what? Yep. What the? You know, letting go of guys, making moves. This Nick Khan guy. How long has he been president, man?
Not long. It's been, I want to say, like, under a year. Like, we're about to hit the full year. Like, he was a very recent bring in.
It's like there was like, you know what? He's got a different idea. Let's turn left. Let's see what happens. Let's see something different he's doing, and we'll go with that. I want to see. Let's see what happens, man.
I'm with you. We got to, at least on the business standpoint, we have to let it play out. I mean,
next 6 months, I want to see. I want to see what's happened.
It's going to be very interesting because AEW, like you said, they are on the run. They are on a roll, but it's like we just said, the free agency is about to be flooded. And so we're about to find out just how shrewd a businessman Tony Khan really is. Like, he's right now, he has kind of had to kind of pick and choose, you know, from whatever he can get. And now he's gonna have the whole free agency, and it sounds like all of independent wrestling to choose from. Unless someone in independent wrestling makes themselves enough of a brand that WWE takes notice, he's gonna pretty much get to be the guy. And that's either gonna be the kind of thing that he wields correctly, or absolute power will corrupt absolutely. So I don't know. We'll see like how this goes for AEW.
A lot of people talking like this is like WCW all over again. Do you think that?
It's hard to call it WCW all over again just because they don't have a lot of the issues that WCW did. Like when Bischoff was
reminiscent of them. Yeah.
Reminiscent. Yeah. Absolutely. 100% reminiscent of WCW, but like they don't, like a good example of this is WCW. Whenever they did a pay-per-view, WCW didn't get the pay-per-view revenue. WCW didn't get the merch sales. Like that all went to Turner Home Entertainment and the company itself. And so I don't think AEW is necessarily in a position where Turner has hamstrung them the way that they did with WCW, but it does feel like if AEW focuses on telling the coherent stories that they have been telling, because their storytelling I think is much better than WCW in the 90s, they will be fine. Because I've been going through the Monday Night Wars just like episode by episode, so I'll watch Raw from that week, then I'll watch Nitro, and I've just been going through. And it literally, if you watch 1996, the WWE product is garbage. I mean, it's really just, you've got all kinds of stuff going on and none of it is entertaining, but it's a more coherent show every week than Nitro, because Nitro is just chaos and what's Hulk Hogan doing? What are the Four Horsemen doing? Like it's just all of this nonsense every week. I'm sorry for the massive thunderstorms going on outside. We'll be wrapping up shortly, but it definitely feels like AEW is trying to tell a more coherent story. They're trying to focus more on the television show they're producing than taking out WWE. Because that was WCW's big problem, is that they didn't care about WCW, they just cared about hurting Vince. They're like, it doesn't matter if people like the show, as long as we're giving away their rating, giving away their results and taking their talent. Whereas AEW is like, what matters right now is our fans liking us. What matters right now is our fans wanting to come back. Like, hell, every show they give away turnbuckles. They give away, Cody Rhodes will give away his boots. CM Punk gives everyone free ice cream. Like, they want you to keep coming back. And Tony Khan, like, usually come, especially on the big shows, Tony Khan will come out there and be like, hey, guys, we got a really big show. We're about to go on the air. Thank you all for being a part of this. Like, it feels like the crowd is a part of it. Whereas with WWE, they're like, welcome to the show. You're here. Thank you for being in the arena that you're in this week. Like, they have a pre-recorded voice. You're a customer. Whereas with AEW, you're part of the show. And I don't know if that's necessarily WCW as much as it is ECW. Like, they feel like if ECW had been given a legitimate chance and if, you know, Paul Heyman wasn't Paul Heyman. Because that was also a whole thing. But what do you do you kind of get what vibes are you getting from this Monday Night War 2.0?
Yes, sometimes I get that vibe, that WCW vibe. But like you said, this, it was a little chaotic back then. I was in the midst of it because my pops was in it. So yeah. You know, so I think now different kind of guys running this, man. Different kind of era with the Bucks, with Cody, with Tony Khan, like you said, Tony Khan, that money goes straight to him. He's in control. Deep pockets, my man's got here. You know, he doesn't have to answer to nobody. And it just, like, with WWE, this whole us versus them, mm-hmm. situation. How long will that go? How long, you know, because once WWE is out of the picture, where do we go from there? Can we work together? What do we see? America is only so big, and I don't see the territories being a thing.
No,
it's just not. It's not.
I can see there being territories for like live shows. You know what I mean? Like, because every company will eventually settle into their own touring schedule. But I think you're right about the fact that we've got TV, we've got the internet, like everything, nothing has ever been this accessible. Like back in the 90s, if you wanted to watch New Japan, you had to wait for someone to send you a VHS, or mm-hmm. maybe you had a really expensive satellite package, but even then, you're waiting on those shows. Whereas now it's like, I was able to watch AEW on Friday, on Saturday I watched SummerSlam, on Sunday I watched NXT, on Monday I watched the New Japan show. Like, you can just watch anything. And GCW also, like, anyone can see everything.
We talked about this either, I think it was earlier this year or last year, when we see other talents in other promotions doing. And at first we were talking about it. You said, you know what? It's cool to see everybody making money, you know, especially mm-hmm. with the pandemic. You want to see guys make money.
Yeah.
But with different storylines, people want in one group, one company going to another company, another different group. Does it become confusing? See, that's what I'm trying to figure out here. Yep. You know, yeah, we're sharing talents left and right, but then like, there's too much going on. How can you keep track, especially with the internet right now? Everybody's got their mm-hmm. own streaming service. What is doing what, where, who's what? You know, it gets a little staticky, a little confusing. That's just me.
I'm completely with you. I feel like as soon as New Japan Strong starts touring more, and that mm-hmm. like I think once they're a touring brand, that's going to make people commit to them in a different way than they were when it was a taped show. Because when it was a taped show, it's like if your taping schedule works out, yeah, come on in. We'll work with you and we'll see what's going on. But now you have to make the shows. You have to be in the town, and that's a different mindset. That's a different kind of job than showing up for a taped show. And I think that's gonna help settle some of the static. Because right now you got guys like Violence Unlimited, Brody King and Dickinson, and all those guys have a big thing going on with LFI in, mm-hmm. in Ring of Honor right now. But because they take so much stuff for New Japan Strong, there also is stuff going on in New Japan. And I have to feel like once everything starts to catch up, it will start to, you know, it'll start to even out. It will start to, at the very least, get a little less staticky and a little easier to follow. We'll see. It's definitely exciting. I mean, I hate that there was so much doom and gloom, because like CM Punk's back, like that's a big anything can happen moment. But there are just so many asterisks that we have to add to this weekend. And I'm glad everyone on Twitch was there to join us for all the asterisks and all of the ranting and everyone that joined us on this podcast. Tama, where can everyone find you on your social media?
Guys, you can find me on Twitter, Tama_Tonga. You can find me on Instagram, the good bad guy, Tama Tonga. One little side note before let Ross here plug in. Next week, we're going to have a guest come in. He is the creator of the G.O.D. entrance music, Firing Squad. His name mm-hmm. is No Name Tim. Also known as Tim Williams, will be joining us next week as a guest. Join us again next week at 6:30 p.m. Eastern. Ross, where can they find you?
I'm at Ross W. Berman IV on Twitter, Ross Berman IV on Instagram. You can find all my music at rossberman.bandcamp, which is why I'm real excited for next week's episode. I want to get into the brain of someone that makes wrestling entrance themes, because it feels like such a different, such a specific type of music. Sure. Next week's gonna be a blast. Thank you all for joining us this week.
Thanks, guys. Yeah, Ross, thank you very much. That was great. I love that you brought that energy in, man. Really feeling that. You guys, check out his Twitter. It's very entertaining. It keeps you on the loop, man. It's very, very entertaining. Trust me. Join us. You can help support us at patreon.com/Tama's Island. Join us on, we got happy hours on Patreon every Saturday, sometimes Fridays. We have watch-alongs, Tama's Island. Guys, thank you very much. I'll see you guys again next week. Enjoy your week. Stay safe. Wear your mask. get your shots. All right. Stop all that nonsense. Let's get this world back on track. Ross, thank you very much. You guys, enjoy your week. Peace.
Thank you for listening to this week's Thomas Island. Find more great Thomas Island content like the Shotgun series, weekly happy hour Zoom calls with Tama, video versions of the podcast, and much, much more at patreon.com/Thomas Island and visit @Thomas Island on Instagram and Twitter.